You're listening to Lace Up with your host, VJ Johnson II. Grab your tennis shoes, get your cleats, because it's time to lace up. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Lace Up. I'm your host, VJ Johnson II, ready to give you the latest, hottest news and updates in the world of sports. I appreciate everybody jumping in and joining the podcast and giving me a little bit of your time to talk some good, healthy sports talk as always. Hope everybody's had a great week as always. We are winding down August, y'all. This is crazy. Year's been moving pretty fast. We're getting ready to get into September. Spooky season is right around the corner. Look, Starbucks, they got the fall drinks already out there, man. I had me a pumpkin spice frappuccino the other day. I highly suggest y'all go in there and get you one. But man, yeah, love the fall. Really looking forward to the fall weather, to be perfectly honest with you, just because this heat is no joke. And look, anybody who's working outside, like I empathize with you, because again, this weather, this heat is insane. But again, sooner or later, we will be getting some nice fall weather. So looking forward to that. With that being said, looking forward to our conversation that we have for today. Got a lot of nice things to discuss that's happening around in the sports world. Got some football updates, obviously, because football is right here, man. Excited. Look, we're getting closer and closer, man. Tomorrow is week zero of the college football season. Of course, we got the NFL. It's currently in preseason right now. That is right around the corner as well for week one. But with that being said, let's get into things. And wait. Before I forget it, man, I didn't get a chance to talk to you all about this at all. But I know we had the versus that took place the other week. Didn't get a chance again to discuss it with y'all last week. But we had the versus with Donnell Jones and Joe, and you know, I don't know how many of you all watched it, but you know, me as an R&B fan, and I know a lot of people as you know, 90s R&B fans were tuned in to watch it. And of course, you know, both of these artists, you know, Donnell Jones and Joe have some hits. You know, obviously Joe is more so known for you know, a lot of more of his hits, just because they went hit the charts a lot harder. But Donnell Jones has his fair share of hits as well, that align, you know, that you know, can also put up a fight. And you know, I said before this versus, you know, people would sleep on Donnell Jones, which they really are. You know, honestly, like, there's a lot of songs that Donnell has that people don't realize. There's some things, some songs that he wrote that people don't realize, like he has those deep cuts. But of course, you know, Joe has, you know, his cuts as well. So, but again, overall, I thought that, you know, from a musical standpoint, like, both of these guys had brought a lot to the table. Only thing I was really disappointed is because my boy Donnell Jones, man, his voice is shot. You know, unfortunately, we know Joe was going to bring it from a performance perspective. But you know, Donnell Jones, you know, I know that, and I actually found this out. I didn't find it out. He was going through some, you know, challenges and some struggles in his past. And, you know, that can affect, obviously, the things that he was going through can affect your you know, your voice. And, you know, of course, when you're not performing as much. So, yeah, but there was a lot of jokes going on around on Twitter, man. It was actually a fun night, man. And like I said, they had a real R&B unk off. You know what I'm saying? That was a real R&B unk off. And you know, I was living for every moment of it. Again, you know, love both of those artists and what they brought to the table. Just again, knew that Joe was gonna bring it on the mic harder. And Donnell Jones, he probably, honestly, I said this, he should have just stood up there, honestly, and let his songs play, and then and let it speak for itself. So that's what I would have did, to be honest with you. If I was Donnell, I would have just been like, look, I'm going up here, I'm gonna play my songs, and I'll let it, you know, let those speak for themselves. But with that being said, again, let's jump into our sports talk because we have some good stuff to talk about. Breaking news for the first topic of the day. Keelan Russell has been named the starting quarterback of the Alabama Crimson Tide. Keelan Russell, he's been named QB1. This is reported by Pete Thamel from ESPN. This was on last Saturday. And again, former five-star recruit, Austin, he was competing with Austin Mack. Again, former five-star recruit is Keelan Russell. He was competing with Austin Mack for the starting quarterback position. Obviously, with Ty Simpson leaving, going to the NFL, there was a lot of questions about who was going to be the next quarterback in line to take over for the Crimson Tide. And we know that, you know, again, Keelan Russell, he was the number two in the number two overall recruiting class in 2025. And so he did appear in two games as a freshman for the Crimson Tide. And just from kind of a statistical standpoint, what he was able to do, he threw for 240 yards and four touchdowns as well. So, and again, this is during his freshman year. And then we also saw him in the A-Day game, of course, as well. Keelan Russell, a guy who's 6'3", 207 pounds. Again, this is his sophomore year. And he'll be leading this Crimson Tide offense who, you know, has playmakers across the board. You may not know about all of these playmakers, but playmakers are, you know, all around that offense. Again, you got Lotzer Brooks. You got Ryan Coleman Williams. You got Sidarian Morgan. You know, you got guys like that. Derek Meadows, you know, there's some guys out there that could really, you know, make this offense go. And Russell is going to be that guy. And again, you know, just to give you guys a backstory about, you know, Russell, before he joined the Crimson Tide, obviously he had a really, really great high school career at Duncanville High School in Texas. And, you know, he actually, you know, won two state championships. He was the Gatorade National Player of the Year, Elite 11 Finals MVP, honors as a senior in high school. So really, really great career, like I said, in high school. And then, you know, on the other side, you know, Austin Mack, obviously he was at Washington in 2023. He's been with Kalen DeBoer. This is his fourth year under a DeBoer system. And, you know, last season he played 62 snaps. And, you know, obviously, like, he was the primary backup. He did end up stepping into the Rose Bowl after Ty Simpson went out with the fractured ribs. And you know, kind of, you know, he honestly provided a spark for the offense. He pushed, you know, obviously led them on a drive down the field. Obviously, it was a little late at that point. But, you know, Austin Mack, again, you know, stepped in. And again, a guy who understands DeBoer's system. And, you know, when you look at this quarterback battle, and I mentioned this before, you look at Mack and you look at Keelan Russell, both of these quarterbacks, they provide you different things. You know, I think that Mack, he gives you that experience from understanding DeBoer's system. And then you look at Keelan Russell, a guy, Keelan Russell, who, you know, he gives you that versatility, right? Explosive plays, you know, and that playmaking ability, not only with his arm, but with his legs is also, you know, that's a threat, being that dual threat guy. And the biggest question for Kalen DeBoer and the coaching staff was, hey, do you want to go with experience or do you want to go with the guy who's a playmaker who has a higher ceiling? Because I do think Keelan Russell has a higher ceiling. And, you know, I as you were kind of looking at the reports that were coming out, listening to DeBoer and Ryan Grubb in these kind of pressers, press conferences after practice, you could get a sense and a feel of, well, initially, I want to say initially you could, because they kept it very vague, but you started to, based off of the reports that were coming out of fall camp, you could see things were leaning a certain direction. And I personally feel like they've known for a few weeks who they were going to name the starter. I was always a guy who said, again, all respect to Austin Mack, but I was always a guy who's always like, look, Keelon Russell is that guy. And I think you go with him. You know, he gives you the best opportunity to win. And, you know, even after he's been named the starter, I mean, his teammates, they've reportedly known a difference since he's been named the starter. I mean, the mentality that he has as such a young player is really good. And look, for example, you know, during scrimmages, he's been leading the offense down the field on one of the best defenses in the country. You know, Alabama, again, they're going to be up there as one of the best defenses in the country with the amount of players that they have returning. And Keelon Russell being able to lead drives against this defense. And again, for all of those who may be like, oh, you know, how is he being able to lead drives against such a you know, this defense is supposed to be top notch. Look, this is what we call iron sharpening iron. This doesn't mean the defense isn't making plays and getting the best of the offense. But what you want to see is a back and forth. You want to see offense be able to drive the ball on a defense like Alabama's. That shows you, you know, a bit of who you are. And, you know, a prime example, you know, Keelon, he hit a 55-yard. The practice right after he was named the starter, Keelon hits a 55-yard pass to Ryan Coleman Williams, and then the offense is scoring four plays later. So those are the type of things you want to see from Keelon Russell. You want to see those connections be established early. You know, him and Ryan Coleman Williams, him and Sadarius Morgan, him and Lotzia Brooks, or aka Lottie Brooks, him and Derek Meadows. You know, that's what you want to see. And I think with Keelon Russell, this changes the trajectory of the season for Alabama when you're looking into this season. And, you know, yes, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, you know, they're going to be growing pains. Of course, there's going to be growing pains. I personally hate that when it comes to Alabama, there's always like, oh, there's going to be growing pains. There's growing pains with any quarterback who's stepping into being a starter their first year. It happened with Arch at Texas. It happened with Julian Sain at Ohio State. There's going to be growing pains. He's going to make mistakes. He's going to throw an interception, you know, whatever. But the thing about this is looking at these first few games in the season, you know, gives him an opportunity to be able to get all those kinks out and be able to get comfortable and get better each game. You know, they had their first game against Eastern Carolina at home. So that'll be a good, you know, start for him to be able to get in a momentum and get in a groove. You know, obviously, you know, early on, they do have, you know, they go on the road against Kentucky, first road test. You know, obviously, I think that the Tide will handle their own. But again, being able to be tested on the road before. And then they get into, obviously, like that 9-game conference schedule in the SEC is not going to be any joke. So I think the more comfortable he can get early, the better. And again, and I'll say this last thing, and then we'll move on to our next topic here, is that, you know, I've noticed that people are starting to change their tune about Alabama since Keelon has been named the starter. Everybody's like, oh, you know, Keelon, the same people who were talking trash about Bama, oh, they don't know who their quarterback is going to be. Oh, there's questions on their offensive line. Oh, they're not going to be able to run the football. All these different things, all the trash has been talked. They rank us number 13, which I love, by the way. Perfect spot for Alabama. Please, look, I didn't want us to be ranked in the top five at all. Like, we are in a perfect position because you got to earn it. But those same people are now saying, oh, now that Keelon's been named the starter, now that makes me look at this Tide team differently. That makes things even more interesting. You know, they could be a dangerous team. No. Stay on that side. Stay on that side. We're not trying to hear that. Keep the same energy that y'all was talking about the tie prior to who the starting quarterback was going to be named, and keep that same energy throughout the season. And look, when we get on the field, we'll see what happens. But I'm confident in this team that's going to be stepping on the field. And, you know, I think that you're going to see a lot more motivated team. You know, obviously, this is a newer offensive line that's going to be trying to gel together. But I think that, you know, with the coaching that they brought in with Aaron Klemm, NFL coaching experience on coming from, you know, his standpoint, it's gonna provide a lot of knowledge and gonna help these players grow. So again, and the reports that have been coming out of camp is that Bama has been able to run the football. So I expect there to be some improvements in that area. And look, we're running the football, Keelan's spreading it out, and he's that real dual threat quarterback. This is gonna be a dangerous Alabama offense. And that's going to pair up nicely with the defense. So that being said, man, looking forward to KR-12. Like I said, Keelan Russell, man, look, bring us home, man. He can look with Keelan Russell there. He can lead us. He can lead us to a deep run. You know, if everything hits and clicks on all cylinders, watch out for my Todd. Next up, man, let's talk about something that's been going on in college football. Huge story right now when it comes to these NFL players that are talking about transferring and entering, you know, coming back to college football and entering the portal. There's been some crazy news and back and forth that's been going on throughout the last couple of weeks. So as we look at this, and let me just give you the backstory before I jump into kind of where we're at currently. The NCAA transfer portal had opened and pretty much it granted a temporary restraining order for players to return to college for a fifth year of eligibility. So there were 8 former college players who were plaintiffs in Louisiana court to enter their names in the portal. And so these players were running back T.J. Harden from SMU. There was tight end Daquan Wright from Ole Miss, offensive lineman Waylon Lapujo from BYU, defensive lineman Xavier Harris from Ole Miss. You had linebacker Trent Hendrick from James Madison, cornerback Ethan Johnson from Appalachian State, cornerback Blake Cotton from Utah, and a kicker Luke Jawetski. I probably said that wrong, but that's all good, from New Mexico. And so Daquan Wright was currently listed on the Cleveland Browns roster. Harden, one of the other players, he played in the Seattle Seahawks preseason opener against the Cowboys before he was eventually cut. And then one of the other players, Xavier Harris, he was waived by the Saints on August the 8th. So, again, there were even more players than that. I just named 8, but there were up to 30, you know, players that were kind of going through this whole kind of transition of being granted a restraining order. So, and there's still some that are in the process today. So now where we're at, because some of these players that have already come out, they've committed to, you know, LSU. There's a couple of players that have committed to LSU, Daquan Wright and one of the other guys. We'll kind of get a little bit more into that. So, which I thought was pretty interesting and crazy, because, you know, I just think that granting NFL players you suit up for an NFL team and then you get cut and you say, I'm going to go back to college. That's absolutely ridiculous. If you put on an NFL uniform, there's no way you need to be going back to college to play football against 18, 19, 20 year olds because you were cut from an NFL team. I don't agree with that. I will never agree with that. That's just, this whole situation is just, it's chaotic to me, and it's doesn't make any type of sense. So fast forward, and I kept saying, I'm like, look, this is dumb, y'all. Like, what are we even talking about here? This is why they talk about college football being cooked, the NCAA being cooked, like all of these crazy things. But fast forward, the Big Ten ended up coming out and saying, hey, look, we're banning this from happening. We're not going to allow this happen. And they put out a statement. The SEC followed suit and put out a statement that they will ban this from happening as well. And they will be suspending coaches who add pro players. So let me just read you all, kind of catch you up on what the logistics and what kind of what all of this entails. So it says that, you know, as any SEC school, you know, that brings back an NFL, NBA, WNBA player to the program, they're going to face penalties, obviously steep discipline when it comes from the penalty side. And this was a new, again, new policy. It was unanimously approved this week among the conference's 16 members. This was on Wednesday when this was approved. So the penalties are actually going to include a half a season suspension for a coach, a fine that matches 50% of the sport's annual budget, and a revocation of league voting rights. So in the SEC member schools, they also gave Greg Sankey the authority to impose additional sanctions as needed. So again, this, you know, the chancellors and the presidents, they voted 15-0 to confirm the penalties, with LSU being the only school that abstained from voting. Why? It's because LSU was the school that they had players that were actually coming, you know, back. The Daquan Wrights and a couple of one or two other players. This was a unanimous decision. Again, the Big Ten did it, the SEC. The ACC has now joined this as well in banning these professional athletes from coming back to college. And, you know, they said, look, and honestly, I like what the SEC is doing, because they actually even took it a little bit further than what the Big Ten did. And they said, look, they're prohibiting anyone who has previously declared for professional basketball from rejoining college athletics without appropriately withdrawing. So that's another step. So here's, again, another kind of a breakdown. Before we kind of bring this one to a close here again, they have made this step-by-step explanation. And again, this is directly from the SEC, that institutions are not permitted to have an athlete on their roster who has, one, previously declared for NFL, NBA, or the WNBA draft and didn't appropriately withdraw; two, has signed a contract with an NFL or other professional football league, NBA / G League or WNBA or affiliate team. And last but not least, number three, been listed on an NFL or other professional football league, NBA or G League or WNBA or affiliate roster. So those are those are rules there. And again, Sankey is authorized to enforce this expectation and penalties against these institutions. And again, being that Lane Kiffin and LSU refused to vote, again, because Ole Miss's tight end Daquan Wright, who was on the Cleveland Browns roster, he was waived or cut, and then end up saying, look, in declaring, entered into the portal and committed to going to LSU, which would be his fifth season of football. But again, I think that this whole situation is just, it's absolutely, honestly, it's ridiculous. It's stupid that we're even at this point where college football has gotten here to where they're saying that it's okay for pro athletes to come back to college football. They need to get this thing under wraps. And for all of those of you who, you know, those of you who laughed at Nick Saban, you know, Saban said that this is going to be chaos in college football, free agency in college football, this whole NIL, all of this whole thing that's happening right now, Nick Saban called it. And a lot of y'all laughed at him. Y'all hated. Y'all said they, you know, he was old and just because he couldn't compete. And while he was sitting here trying to fight for some structure, for some organization for college football, y'all said all of these things about the GOAT, about Nick Saban. And look where we are now. We're in pure chaos, and the NCAA can't get control of it. And even now, we still have states that are even trying to push back and saying that, you know, the SEC and the Big Ten and the ACC, they're not all, they can't. You know, overrule what a judge says. It's a lot of back and forth right now, but this is what happens when you don't have any structure, when there's no organization, when there's no commissioner in college football. You have separate commissioners, but they don't have one head commissioner like they do in the NFL to be able to enforce these rules, you know, have something standard across the board so that everybody's aligned. But hey, I'm excited to watch football. But again, this is a huge issue that needs to be addressed. This is, you know, something that has gotten out of control, and they need to take hold of it sooner rather than later. So, but shouts out to, you know, the conferences for doing this. And I haven't really heard anything from the Big 12 yet, but so far, again, the SEC, the Big 10, and the ACC, I'm sure the Big 12 will join the pack as well. But yeah, man, they got to get control of this, and we'll continue to follow this story and see what happens. But before we get into our next topic here, you are listening to the Lace Up Sports Talk Show right here on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Audioboom, of course, on YouTube as well. Make sure you hit that subscribe button below. You'll see it right there in the banner. You also will see information regarding the Instagram page. Please make sure you go follow the Instagram page as well. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. You'll be notified when new episodes get posted. And you'll also be notified on the Instagram side, any postings that come out. I appreciate all the love, all the support that you all continue to show, and looking forward to continuing this journey with y'all in this great discussions that we have about sports. All right, now it is time for our hot take of the day. Now, obviously, I'm an SEC guy, so we're gonna make this hot take live within the SEC kind of football topic here. I know there's been a lot of discussions about who are gonna lead the pack in the SEC this year. You know, people have obviously come out and said that it's Texas and everybody else, or Texas and Georgia and everybody else. You know, there's other people that say, look, the top half of the SEC, you know, it's anybody's, you know, again, that top half, anybody can win it. You got, again, Texas, people, Georgia, you got LSU, Alabama, Ole Miss. You know, you got a few teams that people are throwing out there that can make a run and get to the SEC championship game. But my hot take of the day is going to be that neither Texas or LSU are going to make the SEC championship game. That's why this is a hot take, people. Look, you gotta make bold predictions out here. That is my hot take. Neither Texas nor LSU is going to make the SEC championship game. And listen, you could call me crazy. Look, you can think that's insane. But I think that, again, neither one of them are going to make the SEC championship game. Instead, I think that the SEC championship game will feature Alabama and Georgia. Yeah, I think Alabama and Georgia are going to meet again for the SEC championship game. It'll be a rematch again. I think that we, you know, seen, you know, historically, Alabama and Georgia meeting up in the SEC championship game has been, you know, again, something that has been, you know, looked at as the matchup that you want to see, you know, in the SEC. I think that they last year marked the sixth time that they met in the SEC championship game. While that one was a little more lopsided than normal, obviously, but with Georgia winning that one. But I think that, you know, we'll see Bama in Georgia. You know, again, looking at Keelon Russell being, you know, the guy stepping into a situation where you have playmakers on the offensive side of the ball, coupled with Alabama's defense that's going to be one of the top defenses in the country. I think that, you know, if the Tide can hit their stride and really pick up some momentum, some steam, they could get through this, again, 9-game conference schedule, and they could end up here in Atlanta, man. And then, obviously, you know, you have Georgia. One thing that I would say on the Georgia side of things, from an offensive side of the football, they did, you know, lose some playmakers on the offensive side. So who's going to be those, you know, receivers that are going to step up? You know, what guys do they have that can beat you over the top? That's going to be the question that needs to be answered from their side. But obviously, you know, Kirby Smart typically, you know, he'll have those guys ready from a defensive standpoint. But what is the offense going to look like? So those are questions that need to be answered. Obviously, they do have, Gunnar Stockton coming back. So they're not having a new quarterback. But again, who is he going to throw the ball to? But yeah, ultimately, that's my hot take, man. No LSU, no Texas in the SEC championship game, but instead Alabama and Georgia. All right. So let's move on here. Let's talk about our next topic. And this is going to come from training camp, just some training camp news in the NFL. There was one specific joint practice that happened. And, you know, again, this happens every year. There's fights at joint practices. So I just wanted to talk about the Cowboys and the Saints joint practice, because each of these teams were fined $500,000 for their parts in a fight that took place at the joint practice that was conducted for both of these teams. Now, obviously, the NFL and the competition committee, they set forth a standard and made sportsmanship a point of emphasis, you know, obviously over the years. And this also includes sportsmanship at joint practices, not only on game day, right? So I think in knowing those things, you know, obviously each team, this was communicated to each of these teams, of what the expectations are when it comes to joint practices. You know, each club was reminded of what those standards are, and also the responsibility that they hold to prevent unsportsmanlike situations at joint practices that could, you know, result in injury. So moving forward, like I said, there were some fights. There were multiple fights that occurred on both of the fields at the joint practices for the Saints and the Cowboys. There were teams that were split up to work on their offensive defenses against one another. We all know, you know, that's what goes on in joint practices. Want to test what your offense and your defense looks like up against the starting offensive defense of the opposing team. Now, during these separate splits for both of these teams, there were punches thrown on both of the fields. They had to stop play multiple times throughout the course of the joint practice. And on one of those fields, it was a Saints offensive player and a Cowboys defensive player rushing over to join in the commotion. One player tossed a helmet in one instance. In another, one of the other skirmishes, one of those other ones, a player was body slammed to the ground. Now, both of the head coaches, Brian Schottenheimer, Cowboys coach, and Kellen Moore, head coach of the New Orleans Saints, they discussed at one point whether or not they should continue to practice, if they should just go ahead and call it early, because these guys could not get it together. But they instead decided to go ahead and end the practice on time. And, you know, obviously the NFL afterwards, they did request film of the practice so that they could evaluate the situations, what happened. And then ultimately that resulted in $500K being fined for both of these these teams. And so just out of kind of just taking a quote from Kellen Moore after, you know, the practice, he said, look, obviously there was a lot of non-football stuff in that joint practice, unfortunately. He said, we had a clean one today against the Rams. This was, they had a joint practice. This was fast forward when they had another joint practice with the Rams. So he was more so speaking, you know, in past tense about the fights that had occurred at the previous joint practice with the Cowboys. But he did say, hey, they had a clean one with the Rams and some good work overall. Now, Cowboys owner and general manager Jerry Jones said that the fine that was applied to both of these teams, it was stiff. He said the fine does make the point that it's a serious matter and it starts with everybody at all levels of a club. And the clubs in this case were two that were practicing together. And he said that it really emphasizes the league's intent to control it from the very top, which they start dealing out those kinds of fines. When they start dealing out those kinds of fines, they get your attention. So, you know, again, this is something that, you know, I personally think that, you know, the NFL obviously is doing the right thing. They're doing a good job of that. I think that in joint practices, obviously even practice in general, because this isn't something that just happens at joint practices, right? We see teams in regular practice with each other, they get into fights. You know, there's a lot of built up tension and emotion when it comes to the game of football. You got to think of it from this perspective. These are guys who are, you know, they've been off for playing the game, either in, they haven't played since, well, depending on when their season end, you know, they hadn't played football in at least 6 to 7 months. And so being able to get back out there and have contact and be able to fly around and play the game they love, coupled with the passion that they have for the sport and the love of the game, you know, emotions get involved. You know, somebody says something that you don't like, you react to it. It's hot out there when you're practicing. You know, you're sweating, you're bleeding, you're tired, you're thirsty, you're fatigued, you know, all of those different things, you know, are in the mix, and people react, you know, and does that mean it is right? No, it does not. So what I think that the NFL is doing is good. You know, I think that, yes, skirmishes and scuffles are going to happen in practice. That's just not going to be something that's not going to happen. We have to acknowledge that. We have to realize that that's not going to go away. But what I do think where the line gets crossed is when you're throwing punches and taking your helmet off to sling it at somebody else. Like, no, you know, we listen, this is a game. You know, at the end of the day, we're not trying to injure people. Okay. Scuffles and skirmishes, though, but when you start throwing punches and stuff like that, that's just not, there's no place in the game for that. That's not something that you want to have happen consistently. And so, again, this is something we see every single year. But I think that with this being an example that the NFL has set with this big of a fine, this is something that, you know, these teams have to be aware of. This is what the standard is, and this is what's going to happen, continuing to happen going forward. I'm not saying everybody's going to get a $500,000 fine, but this goes to show you, you know, how much this could hit if you know, these fights you know, occur, these types of fights. So again, at the end of the day, joint practices, which I personally, I don't really like joint practices, to be honest with you. They're cool, but it's like, it just gets kind of weird with joint practices. They're, again, I'm not a player, so, but I don't personally necessarily like the joint practices all the time, because it's like, man, you just hope and pray that your guys come out healthy. You know, we look at and again, this isn't to say that you can't get hurt in your in regular practice too. But you see it in, you know, if you guys watch Hard Knocks, Seattle Seahawks, the guy, Jake Bobo, wide receiver for Seattle, you know, he tore his ACL in a joint practice, you know, and again, that's that play that he did that on. That's not something that I would say that wouldn't have that couldn't have happened in just a Seattle Seahawks practice. It's just, you know, joint practices make you uneasy and weird, because it's like you're going to another team and, you know, it just gets weird. But at the same time, there is benefits to joint practice, to being able to gauge where your football team is from an offensive defensive perspective against some of the better talent, you know, the ones, you know, defense and the ones on defense and offense of other teams, so you get a good sense of kind of where your team is. So but again, that's all I had to say about that when it comes to these joint practices, and just kind of wanted to give you all some updates on that fine that happened. But before we get into our next topic, you are listening to the Lace Up Sports Talk Show right here on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Audioboom. Of course, you're tuning in via YouTube. You should be seeing below on your screen a button for you to be able to subscribe to the YouTube channel. Please hit that button. And also make sure you follow, look up and follow the Instagram page that you see on the other half of the screen there in the banner below. You will be notified once subscribing to the YouTube channel when a new post, episode posts. Also, on Instagram, you'll be able to keep up to date with any new postings or any announcements or anything like that that are going on. I appreciate you all's love and support, and continuing to look forward to, you know, talking sports with y'all. So let's go into our next topic here. Want to shift gears. We've been heavy football. Want to talk baseball right now, because we have a MVP race that's going on in baseball right now, and I want to zero in on one of my guys, one of my favorite players, Chicago Cub Pete Crow Armstrong, or PCA, center fielder, and he's a National League MVP candidate. After, you know, again, This is a great year for Pete Crow Armstrong. You know, one game he had hit, you know, he hit two home runs. He had a leadoff home run and a walk-off home run against the White Sox in that Crosstown Classic series that led the Cubs to a 7-5 10-inning victory. And, you know, PCA, he's only 24 years old, and he's the first player since 2010 to hit a leadoff homer and a walk-off blast in the same game. And it's also the first time in franchise history that a Cubs player has accomplished that in a game. And then he also reached the 30-30 club for the second consecutive season. So that is awesome. Again, that's 30 home runs that he's hit. You know, 30-30 club is big, you know, for baseball. So, you know, those are some things that he's doing. And I think that when you look at, you know, that even the next game after that against the White Sox, he again stepped up and hit another leadoff home run in that game as well, and had a really good solid game overall after that. Again, he had a single, a double, and a walk, and he also hit a two-run home run in the 10th inning as well. So again, PCA is on fire right now, and you know, the Cubs are looking and sitting pretty in the National League, obviously a few games behind the Milwaukee Brewers right now. But they're still sitting in prime position at the top of the wild card right now. And as far as the MVP race that's going on, you know, Shohei Ohtani is the other guy that is in the mix. They're looking at him as a guy that could win back-to-back. But I think right now, if you look at the case for both of these guys, again, it's I think that these two guys are the top of the National League MVP race. I think that it's neck and neck between Pete Crow Armstrong and Shohei Ohtani. If you look at, you know, again, early in the year, Ohtani was favored to win. But again, PCA, with his play and everything that he's been able to do, he has catapulted himself in those conversations. And, you know, I think that to look at the case for Pete Crow Armstrong, you know, his all around value, you know, looking at him, he's leading baseball in outs above average with the Golden Glove caliber center field defense. He also, again, he became the first Cubs player with consecutive 30 for 30 seasons. Again, 30 home runs and 30 stolen bases, which is amazing. And again, he's time and time again provided dramatic late game heroics. He's had leadoff home runs. Defensively, he showed up in the outfield. And again, the Cubs are in the thick of the NL pennant race. So, you know, again, that wouldn't be the case if it was not for Pete Crow Armstrong. So that's the case for him. And I'm looking forward to how the rest of this year shakes up. But I do think that right now, everybody in Chicago, we call him MVP. And I think that he is well on his way. And I think he very well, you know, can win this MVP. And I expect him to bring it home. You know, if he continues doing what he's doing, you know, and the Cubs win the pennant, I think the MVP is definitely his. So, yeah, looking forward to how the rest of the season shakes up for my Cubs. But yeah, that's all I have for y'all today. Again, appreciate all of the love and support. I hope you all have a great weekend. Enjoy yourselves. Sit back. We got some football that is going to be on your screens tomorrow, week zero of the college football season. Can't wait to cut on the TV and watch College Game Day. But first, I will be going. Actually, just to let you guys know, there is a Stranger Things, for all my Stranger Things fans, Stranger Things walking tour that's here in Georgia that my brother and I will be attending in the morning, which I'm super excited about because we're Stranger Things fans. I got my Stranger Things gear, my hat, my shirt. Y'all can check my social media. You'll see me post about that. But excited to do that walking tour and see some different areas where that show was actually filmed. And so, again, whatever you do this weekend, make sure you're safe. Make sure you enjoy yourself. And we'll do it all again next week, man. So, peace, love, and Roll Tide.